Queensland has become the first state to sign a memorandum of understanding with the Abbott government aimed at cutting green tape and streamlining environmental assessments. The agreement effectively transfers the power to approve big resources and infrastructure projects from the Commonwealth to the state, allowing for a speedier response to development applications. Environment Minister Greg Hunt says the higher standards will be set, but opponents say the move will unwind 30 years of environmental protections. Greg Hunt, welcome to Breakfast.
Good morning, Fran.
Now, Minister, you're handing project approval powers to Queensland and to any other state that will sign an MOU. How much Commonwealth oversight will there be under this new arrangement?
Well, there is significant oversight, and in fact, the broad principle here is to maintain in their entirety Commonwealth standards, but to move to a single assessment and over time a single approvals process. It's important to understand that around Australia, the timeframes have continued to extend for making decisions, and that's not helping with standards, but it's sure hurting with actually getting decisions made.
Can we go to that? We should be able to do this. Yeah, I want to ask you about that because I want to ask you where the evidence is that federal approval powers are slowing down things beyond the 28-day timeframe for you as federal minister to make a decision.
Well, it's very easy. I opened the bottom drawer when we came in and there were 50 projects from what's called the water trigger, none of which had been processed by the previous government, so that's just one arm of the Federal Environment Act. They changed the law and then made no decisions. So these weren't even decisions as to whether to approve or not approve projects. It was just whether to require a certain type of assessment under the water trigger. Now, in my case, I decided that 47 out of 50 of them would face this trigger. But these were decisions that were literally piled into the bottom drawer and time was frozen. So they had passed all of their due dates, they had not progressed any of the projects and nothing could be determined beyond this area until the decision was made by the federal minister. So it was sort of an extraordinary act of either incompetence or negligence that you change the law, you freeze the project and you won't even determine whether or not the law applies.
But with this holding up projects, many of those projects didn't even have state approval yet.
No, in this case, what I found is that this was often the last element. There are a number of projects that had been waiting for the decisions, determinations to be made on the water trigger, and that's an example of a broader problem where time has been allowed to go to extend, and projects are delayed, and there's no actual environmental benefit. There's just a long, slow process. New Zealand
with respect, though, Minister, that's what you've outlined there might be a problem with the Minister, but it's not necessarily a problem with the legislation, which I'd go back to, sets a 28-day timeframe for the federal minister to make a decision. In fact, business was asked this question at a Senate inquiry, and major business groups couldn't supply any evidence of major delays because of federal powers and oversight. And there's a lot of that in the majority report of the committee. So there's a 28-day time frame which you, as a federal minister, if you're operating effectively, can use to make a decision. Where's the hold-up?
Well, we are clearing things, and that's what we're doing at our end.
So it's working as it is.
Hold one sec, Fran. Let me point to examples. I have 600 federal environmental issues that are in the list of registered projects. Many of them go back not just 18 months, but 2 years and well beyond that. So the 28 days is one time frame for one step. Mm. The entire system runs in parallel with what happens at the state level. So what we can do is move to a single assessment process and a single approvals process and a single documentation process. And why does this matter? It means that we can still have high standards, but that rather than waiting, you know, 1 and 2 and in some cases 3 years for decisions, things can be done far more efficiently. That's a national good, to be able to get decisions made without duplicating resources.
Everyone wants decisions made effectively, of course, but they also want the environment protected. And so when you say high levels of protection, are you telling the Australian people now that the levels of protection embedded in this MOU are the highest standards currently covered by federal environmental law? Are they the standard? So the states are signing on to the federal environmental protections.
The federal environmental law remains and remains unchanged in its standards. That's clear and categorical and absolute. So what's the deep point here? The point is we can do things better. The water trigger is one example of chaos in decision making. But right across the board, there's a huge duplication of effort and of work. It's just like if you have to fill in paperwork twice, you have to be on the phone to two different agencies rather than to have a single central agency to call for your personal issues if you're looking to try to deal with unemployment benefits. Work-related entitlements.
But that body of work has arisen because state governments in the past have needed to be overruled to stop things like oil drilling on the Great Barrier Reef, sand mining on Fraser Island, logging of wet tropics rainforests, things like that. The Commonwealth has had to step in.
Well, here what we have is federal standards that remain, federal standards that are fixed and constant, and that's, I think, the right outcome in terms of the standards. But progressively over time, what we've seen is that we are losing the battle to make efficient decisions. And again, I do want to use the New Zealand example. New Zealand, which has unquestionably high environmental standards, arguably some of the best in the world, has a 9-month statutory timeframe. They're able to achieve it through a one-stop-shop process with a limited timeframe. We ought to be able to achieve the two same procedures here of a 9-month time frame and a single process. And it's important to remember that both Julia Gillard and Kevin Rudd agreed on the problem, agreed on the solution.
And then got legal advice saying it wouldn't work.
They were actually mugged by the Greens.
There was legal advice suggesting there were too many state laws and standards and the Commonwealth could never guarantee the states would deliver.
Well, in his last few weeks in office before the election, Mr Rudd was saying that this was a priority, that this was something that he would deliver. This was the central element of the April 2012 COAG agreement, or Council of Australian Governments. It was the grand announcement, and unfortunately, at the last second, with no warning to business or the states, the Commonwealth pulled the rug out from under it a year ago. Well, we're delivering what the two previous Prime Ministers said was an urgent, important, critical need. And I think it is. We can do things more efficiently, and we've already got on with the job and signed a first memorandum of understanding, and we'll be doing it with other states as they are ready.
You're listening to RN Breakfast. We're speaking with Environment Minister Greg Hunt. Minister, New South Wales is facing another really tough day on the bushfire front. Do you think there is a link between climate change and the severity and the frequency of bushfires? Because I note that the former Rural Fire Service Commissioner, Phil Koberberg, says it's a feature of the slowly evolving climate. We've always had fires, but not of this nature and not at this time of year and not accompanied by the record-breaking heat we've had. Is there a connection?
Look, I want to be very, very careful about anything which politicises these fires. At the moment, there are, according to this morning's reports, over 2,000 RFS and related volunteers out in the field. We've had 200 people that have lost their homes. And the very reason that we have an RFS in New South Wales, that we have the CFA in Victoria and other states have equivalent volunteer services, is that we've had well over 200 years of bushfires since European settlement. It's a feature in the history of Australia. I will let others in time debate the issue of severity, but right now the focus has to be on those affected and those fighting the fires. And I know there have been some attempts by some to politicise it. I don't think that's the right thing to do. We have.
I'm not sure why it's politicising to be asking you're the environment minister, your view in terms of, the science and the views of people. But that's a timing issue, is what you're saying. The time is later to discuss that.
I think that it is important in the midst of a massive threat, clearly a tragedy in terms of the loss of home, and there has been on the Central Coast the loss of a life, to be rightly focusing on the volunteers, the families, and the actions that are required. It feels as if there has been a certain amount of opportunism, and I don't think that that's appropriate. I do think that we look at this all in the long term in the context of Australia's history and what we have to be preparing for over coming decades. So I'm happy to look at that long term. I just think that to misuse an event like this from certain quarters, it's just not the right thing to do.
And just finally, Minister, Tony Abbott is one of those volunteers. He was out working over the night in the back burning with his brigade, the Davidson Rural Fire Service Brigade. He's been a member of that for 13 years. Do you think the PM should keep fighting fires now he's Prime Minister?
Yes, I do. I think this is who he is, and I think it's very important to understand that he goes off and he does these things, and he's gone off and done them quietly by himself, without media. He's not sought media. This is the very essence of who and what he is, the community base. And for him, he would feel, and he would feel that he was shirking his duty if he used his office to try to avoid what he regards as a blood commitment to his fellow firefighters, the men and women, not just of Davidson, but of the RFS in general. That's just who Tony Abbott is.
Minister, thank you very much for joining us.
Thanks, Fran.